Hello, Mood Group friends. Marcus here again from Packaging Perspectives, the Mood Group podcast, which brings people from around the world together to talk about their careers and their experiences to date, how they got where they are. We've always thought that if we were to be able to talk to our younger selves and show ourselves some of the things that we've done to get where we are, it would be nice to be able to share that with other people around the world in printing and packaging. I recently had the pleasure of talking with Nicholas Lawrence for another purpose, but doing so quickly realised he had a very interesting career background, which I thought our audience would be very interested to learn about as well. For those of you who are watching the podcast or listening to it, please remember to subscribe for future podcast episodes. And also, if you are interested in being a guest, there's a apply to be a guest button. We'd be delighted to hear your story as well. So without further ado, I'm turning you over to Nicholas Lawrence, who is in the US. And so it's a good morning to you, Nicholas. Thank you for joining us today. As I said in my introduction, your career profile I find very interesting. You've had a very successful career in print and packaging across three continents, more latterly in the US. Perhaps you could share with our audience how you got where you are, some of the things you've learned along the way. I'll try not to interrupt too much, but if I see a little point that I want to expand on, forgive me if I jump in. So without further ado, over to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Marcus. Pleasure being here. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And yes, of course, in my age, heading in the direction of 60 now. So therefore, when you have the pleasure to share with other people how your career, how you progressed through your business life, and what are the milestones, what are the obstacles, the hurdles which you had, what are the successes you create, because all of this comes together. And that is creating your career finally and giving you all of the experience which you gained and why you are well received and in still, we have to say that, still in businesses when people have an experience. But you have to start somewhere, and you mentioned it, three continents. I had the pleasure to be to travel a lot as well, so I've seen a lot of countries. I've been in the Middle East, in Africa, in Europe, obviously, and now currently, and we do not know final stage or not, but at this moment in time, I'm in the US, in the middle of it, I would call it. It's Arkansas, so therefore it's really quite in the middle of the United States. As you mentioned, I started in packaging. From the beginning, it was a packaging trading company. So therefore, we traded everything in the early 90s. What was if interest of customers, of companies, CPGs or smaller companies, and we made just-in-time concepts out of that. So therefore, but predominantly it was about corrugated. I've started this business in the area Mannheim, Heidelberg in Germany. And where we supplied a couple of brand names, made people know. Some others disappeared in the meantime, or have been bought, you know, that all of these private equity world, which is consolidating companies. How did I get to that? Now I could give you a very intelligent answer. It's like that I was a real clear target for me. I want to go into the packaging world. It was not. It was an accident in that sense that I've spoken with someone who was already in the packaging industry and created the interest. So what did I learn from the talks with him when he said, "Say, listen, you're a young guy. What do you want to do?" And I was still searching about that. And then he gave me this explanation. It's the same thing which I would give to everyone else. You will, most of the time, whatever comes to it, in general, we're talking not only about consumer products, not things only which you find in a retail store, in a supermarket or whatever, but everything needs a packaging. So if you want to think about what is the most needed product for business, it's a packaging. It is a corrugated, it's paper, it's plastic, it's could be fiber now, it could be aluminium, it could be everything. So therefore, regardless what you want to sell into a market, when you want to transport it to a certain place, you need a packaging for cotton glass. So that's what I found interesting by saying is, okay, that gives you a hell of opportunities to make business. You're not dependent on one individual thing. And that was my first thought process at this moment in time, how sustainable this would be for a possible opportunity in career, especially when you trade products and you have all of them and you create an expertise, you understand how these things are working, how you can use it, where it's used, and and you can switch. If one thing, take the latest, when this plastic ban discussion started in Europe, yeah, if you have an understanding of packaging works and you can switch to a paper, fiber, aluminium, glass in alternative, you're still in business. Yeah. You're not out of the business. We've seen this with other people when the Nokia friends decided not to make a phone anymore. Oops. Yeah, in that way, they didn't want to go with the iPhone or the smartphones, out of business.
VHS, you know? Video rentals, for example.
Yes. Yeah. So that was a thing which I may not have recognized in total to that day, but it created a situation where I thought that's indeed something. Now, what you have to learn for sure is that when you work in packaging, you have certain, and that was something for me when I changed in my career on a certain moment, and that your ability to supply is a bit limited. You have, like always, what they're saying is that around a factory for packaging material is whatever. It could be 200 miles, 300 miles, depends on the product itself, but it will not travel that good in terms of cost structure. In a lot of cases, when you take bottles or whatever, you ship air. Literally, there's not a lot of material which you ship. So you when you look into this, it's like you need certain positions throughout the continent or wherever. When a company, when you want to have a bit of a more global or more or a continent reach or so, that's what you have to understand. When you have one facility, you have certain limitations around that. So therefore, when you look into this, you always have to scan a bit around as well what customer base is around and, you know, how can I survive and succeed with them? Because if they change something, I may lose a customer, despite the fact that I was a good supplier, but they're moving their location to another place. Can easily happen. So therefore, obviously, then in terms of where a packaging company is, you have to search always your way where the most of your customers could be, that this is a plant close by. Or when you are growing like that, we know all of these big organizations, packaging companies in the world with their multiple sites, like, you know, the big likes of these companies, where they are located with, when you go on their website and you see what they have, 120 locations around the world. Yes, because that's a global company and they want to deliver their customers because they have good, they need the spread. Right. That's what they want to do. So, but yeah, when you start in the early 90s, that's not what you've thought about. Say, well, hey, how big is this? Or so I had to realize this only after a couple of years, that the world around my, what we call the Rhein-Neckar area, so therefore that's where the River Rhine and River Neckar comes together, this is where I started, that this is, that's the limit. For me, it was the limit. So I had then the opportunity, because the business idea which we created at this moment in time was first trading in a just-in-time and then as well in a co-packing opportunity. That means packing people's product straight in the packaging which we had in our warehouse. So really making it easy for them to buy one product finished into their warehouse, not their main product possibly. That was when I started with the idea. It was more like the niche products they have, things they want to have in their portfolio. You know, some of the brands, some of the products you want to have, that you don't want to give it up on, that this has the tradition, this is where they came from. Let's keep it over there, but we need someone to do this. Our new automated plant cannot run that product anymore. So yeah, how can we do that? Co-packers are coming into play. You know, or when you need excess capacity, this is when you go to co-packing. So that was more or less like then my step by recognizing this. I've done this for 7 years, added one more service to the other one. And then I moved ahead to The next larger company in this respect, after 7 years, they were interested in doing the same. That was to these days called SCA Packaging, corrugated company, maybe more familiar or more known to these days for the tissues and the you know, the wipes which you use in the kitchen. Yeah. And but they had this packaging area. I think they are called in the meantime, if I'm not mistaken, International Paper through certain acquisitions.
Yeah.
And so I've done the same over there now with the ability to produce the products as well. So the corrugated and all of the laminated cardboards and all of that. But what I learned over there, that was then an addition to this as a next multiplier, was really like, you're not selling anything without packaging. But in another context is the design. We both know, how do we buy something when we go into a supermarket, normal retail shop or whatever? We do this, yes, you're right. We do this with our eyes. There's a new product coming into the market. We may have seen this on the TV. Someone is promoting it. One of the big CPGs is promoting, we have a new variant, a new product out there in the market. When you have the most boring packaging around that, I can tell you that will be a no seller. So therefore you will get after 4 weeks a call from one of these big guys, whatever, the Carrefours, the Edekas, the Tesco's in the UK, or maybe a Walmart here in the US, and they will tell you, this and take that product out of our shelf. It's not selling at all. Why? It has a horrible packaging. No one wants to try it the first time, because what's your experience with this product? You have not been able to taste it. So you need an attractive packaging around that, which takes the whomever is the responsible person in the household for the grocery. You know? So, you know,
well said.
You also have to think that when you make a packaging design, this is what you have to talk with your customer. Who do you want to approach with that one? Is it the man? Is it the woman who should buy it, because they have different recognition how they would like to when we are in front of a shelf? I've seen this recently. Let me give you an example. When you go here to the US, you're going for and look into the shelf, and you see all of the coffee products. Everything is in a dark packaging format. Okay, so everything is a brown one with something with black. It's a dark green or so. It's everything seems to be always a bit like, when you see this shelf, is very dark. So what is it? Okay, that's just like, we're taking a very heavy, very strong coffee. That's what we want to. That's the implication which we get when we stay there, because our brain is working, what is recognizing, because we can't smell it. It's everything is packed in the packaging format that you do not have that smell. We do want to have a grocery which is smelling through all of the stuff. So that is all protected. And yeah, and then you're getting some guys in between. There was a recent one which this was a Happy Coffee. They have a white box, which you can see from when you move into the aisle, you see already that that coffee, that cube which they're using, because it's white. Yeah? Okay. No, not the normal thing which people believe. Yeah. Is a coffee in there. So that is what you can decide on the design, on the color, on the printing which you use, the experience, what you can deliver via this packaging. And that's interesting. That's extremely interesting to understand that you are part of a decision making in terms of what you can realize. Imagine when the old days, how many colors could we print? When it started, okay, what are the base colors you can print on a certain surface? Paper was maybe easy. Then we came with all aluminium cans with the labels now, in terms of what kind of material, what can you bring? And every color arrives different on the surface of that. It's like you think you have printed a blue one, but on a label, it looks different. So yeah. The paper label, then it looks a bit of a different color. So there's a lot of decisions which have to be made. And then at the end of the day, you have a packaging in front of you, a packaging format. And then you think, oh, that was easy. Not as easy as you think sometimes. And then when you go further, when you make displays, I loved to make displays. I have to tell you that a display at the point of sale, in the aisles there, or close to the checkout, when you make special promotions and you create displays with a wonderful printing and attract the people, especially before they check out the last moment of time, that's something where you can really where you can really influence. And when you see your result as well, you know, because you're getting the feedback, how many products have been sold in this promotion period of time. Yeah.
So and that sector is a very growing sector, isn't it? In print and packaging. I mean, POSM, as it's known, point of sale marketing, because things have migrated away from, say, advertising in magazines or newspapers, not so much, and television, not so much, and moving to digital channels, and then stuff in malls, stuff in retail, as you say.
Oh, but this is like, that's the point, is like we open the doors more and more. Is we've spoken on the other day as well about the social media, you know, Marcus, when we had that. Yeah, there's so many ways of how we can bring a product into the attention of consumers. Yeah, but that's also still, I'm then the old-fashioned guy. Sort of, I like it when I see it, when I can touch it. But it has to start with something where I have the experience, where I really have it in front of me, you know, like touching it. Obviously, you cannot unpack this in the shop or so, but then you have something in your hand which has attracted your eyes, and you have seen this in the TV or in a whatever, in a magazine, which is rarely. Imagine the times when we had sachets, when we had these in the magazines, like samples.
Yeah. There's yeah, like
10 milliliter or something like that. That was also a wonderful time. I made this as well with my first company when we do this. We've done that by putting these sachets into the newspaper. Horrible handwork, so no one wants to do this anymore. You know how many people you need to do that. But that was the way of how you get the things out and convince someone to buy something. Now we have so many more channels where you can do that. But at the end of the day, everything is, again, brings me back to the point. It's packed somehow. You can't ship it without. It has to be there. And we all know it latest from your UPS or FedEx or whomever is supplying it in front of your house. It's in a box out there. And that's the only way how we can deliver it to consumers out there in the market.
And I think your regular person that's not really in the packaging industry like us or the printing industry, I'll have friends sometimes that might ask what I do or whatever, and when I talk about the industry we're in, I say, you know, it's a very big industry. You know, think about your own home, go into your bathroom cabinet, go into your garage, not just your kitchen. You know, there's so many other areas of packaging around the house which people forget about, and it's just everywhere. It's in abundance, isn't it? And like you say, very few products can be delivered without packaging.
But it's like the packaging industry always there as well under threat. We know it. I mentioned it before. Now we have the plastic ban. Everything is under a certain review. And this is like in the packaging, maybe as well in any other industry as well. Sustainability, the environmental effect on that is under review. And you have to prove. You have to prove what you can do. And this is what I like on the packaging as well. There's not a single product which you can offer that, if it is glass, aluminium, paper, or plastic as well. All of that is recyclable in a certain way. Definitely recyclable. The only thing is, like, you have to find your way to recycle it. It's not a matter of is it, it's not the way to. And that's where we struggle, I think, globally struggle on that one, is that how do we get the products back into a supply chain of that. The whole planet is a concept. Our planet is a concept of recycling. When something in the forest is dead, falls on the ground, an animal dies, it will be recycled. There's something which is used to that. And this so also with all of the materials which we're using. So you can do that. I've spent a lot of time since 2015, when the first directive came from the European Commission about plastic and the Packaging Act, when they started to talk about that. I think 2 years, no one has really recognized it properly. From 2017 onwards, the first company started to panic. Whoop, what does that mean? But also here, we have to say that if you bring things back into a stream, and that makes it also your resources. You don't have to need to constantly new resource and material bringing into that. You can really recycle everything. You can do this with paper. You can do this with plastic. The only question is, what you have to understand is, like, in terms of the degradation. That means, what's the quality I'm getting in the next recycle process? And again, it's with aluminium, glass. I don't want to exclude anyone of that. So packaging is packaging, but you can do this with everything. There are certain regulations and there is certain quality which you can get out of it. very interesting thing. I learned it also only 10 years back when I started to learn more about that. Before, it was not a topic. Recycling was maybe in the paper industry, we had something like the Kraftliner, Testliner paper. So, you know, there was already a bit in the Testliner with some recycle work into that. But it has different features in terms of the quality of what your box will look like, your corrugated or wherever you used it. And it's now extended to all of the other materials as well. So, and then there's the next question. What's the input, what you have to do? But yeah, that's what we already know at the end of that. So therefore, when we go back, if you allow jumping back, so therefore, the step was I recognized what I'm doing. I can do this locally as a packaging company. When you run it in your small world over there, that's it. So obviously, I had to make a decision for myself. The world was a bit small. Mannheim, nice place, possibly, depends. I've never returned after that, but it's like there's still people living over there. They like it. Anyhow, so I moved along into a bigger organization because I wanted to see the world and the differences and to understand the differences, because I can tell you with a German is looking into packaging different than to any other nations, any place in the world as well. They have different preferences, how they want to receive their products, what they want to see. And it's also as well with the printing. You will be surprised how a print looks like. And you lived as well in the Middle East. So therefore, you know that when you go to a Panda, a Hyper Panda, or, you know, to the Carrefour over there as well, the shelf looks maybe a bit different. Maybe more colorful. Other colors are used. Everything should be more royal. You know, like everyone is like, there should be a bit more gold in the packaging. That's the upgrade, what the people want to have. And then you go to other countries, in other places, they do not care at all about that, because it's necessary to have the product. So therefore, the selling part is like when I've been in Africa, you see it different. They do not spend so much time on that design of the packaging because the product is needed to survive. Yeah. So different things when you have to get that, but this is an experience which you really get into your own daily work, that you can decide differently, but you have to adapt. So new place, new product, new environment, you have to change it. You can bring your expertise from some other places, but it does not automatically work, because you have to see the culture and the differences, how they want to sell and buy and receive these products. That's what it makes it mandatory to see and to understand. You cannot roll every time the same concept by launching a packaging format around that. And finally, then, in that is like, if you have now all of that, the material decision, then you have the cultural decision, and then finally you have the manufacturing decision to make, which is then going into what's your customer using. Oh, you have an automated packing line. Okay. Yeah. And we are not talking here only about the fact like that you have a cardening machine at the end where you put whatever six pieces into one box. Okay, that's maybe the easiest one, you know, or you take a robot to put it on a pallet or so. No, we are talking then about like, how do you fill and pack dairy products? Now, when I've been in Europe before in the dairy industry with packaging over there, you have your yogurt cups. Yeah, and the complex about the yogurt cup is the cup itself, you have to get the ingredients and the informations around that cup as well. You have to seal that. It has to be you have to secure a certain shelf life, and we all know that it's coming from barriers, for example, which you have in the packaging material, that there is no light and oxygen exchange happening anymore, that you have an extended shelf life, because what's the supply chain? You know, it's like you have a plant somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and you have to ship it to the world. Here, when your product expires in 3 days.
And I was going to add in those qualifications. It's not just you as the manufacturer or the FMCG, but you've got to think about the consumer as well. And
yes,
how's the consumer using the product? Where's it going? The demographics of the consumer, you know, e.g. powdered milk in some applications because there isn't necessarily the refrigeration and that kind of stuff. Right. And all of these things we have to play into when choosing the packaging. Coming back to your career for just a little bit, I'm keen to keep our audience, whilst we're having this conversation, abreast of the steps you were taking. At some stage, you departed from Germany and went on to
Then when I moved in the in Germany, so therefore I moved from my first company and then to the second, was more or less like, it was already international, still an office in Germany, in Nürnberg, but then I traveled. It was a whole European area, so therefore I traveled a lot, had the opportunity to go into certain countries where our customer base was, where I could introduce the ideas which we had about contract manufacturing, supporting as a packaging company, supporting them to do that, and then as well design work, like, because we have done a lot to these days with the point of sale display activities. That was really something which generated as well more margin, because a customer, you know, as more as you offer in your service to that and you make a differentiator, as less there is an individual talk about, can we tell you exactly again what was the price for the box? And we both know that, you know. So in packaging world, usually most of the places when the price is not per unit, per single, it's per thousand, or it's per whatever kind of meters or whatever. It's not per one single selling unit, because the price is so low. You know, when you go for corrugated, you're getting a price per thousand, because it's only whatever, 1, 5, 10, 20 cents. You do not get you pay a euro for that as a big customer, as a CPG. You know, you're paying only cents for that product. And that's something which you have to recognize there as well, that like the to keep it on a certain cost level, that's very much important. And I moved more into the international world by traveling in the first place, got experience in different European countries. That was really helpful. And then by doing the same, like what I started, so therefore most likely I've done then maybe 12 years, the same concept, the same idea, always added to something, you're getting new experiences, like what you can do there as well. And then I thought, whenever, that is a funny thing, like maybe for all of the younger people who listen to your podcast, they may find that out. You always search for something on a certain moment that you're not the last one in the supply chain, because the last one is the poor guy. Whatever happens before of a launch of a product, you can be rest assured to the launch date, someone messed it up in this. And therefore, when you're the last one in that supply chain, everyone asked you to speed up. Oh, can you do it? We know it's not your fault, but you have to help us because we have confirmed to that date. And then they're coming to you as the packaging guy to bring this. So I thought, okay, I will leave the packaging world in this respect. I will go to the manufacturing side of that, of the products, and I make only contract manufacturing. That's when I moved to this Dutch company, Budelpak, who was specialized in food and home and personal care, contract manufacturing for all of the CPGs around there in Europe. But doesn't change. Believe me, it doesn't change. Whatever you do, you're the last one in that supply chain. It's I only had a wrong recognition, you know. So the pressure will never change. It's regardless where you are in the point. It's like you're always the last one in that one, and therefore there's no difference. But this is what I have done over there by working more with the product. So therefore, I experienced then for a while how the packaging which I have sold before is now really received in a manufacturing environment. So we filled bottles, you know, like shampoos. We've done a couple of sachets, these small sachets. There were different product types which we were really packing, and consumer products to brought into the market as excess. For the capacity which the CPGs guys did not have at that time, or they, like what I said, maybe it was a niche product, they still kept it in the portfolio. Or sometimes you have to see this, as more you automate, as more you are specializing yourself. For example, all of a sudden in these days, I remember that talking now in liter ways, so therefore they could fill half a liter, but they could not fill 100 milliliter. But it was still a product which was needed, because especially for the customers, when you want to, or consumers, when you want to convince them to try a new product, you don't want to sell them immediately, or they are shy to buy a 1 liter bottle immediately by saying, "Oh, maybe I do not like it." But then you give them the smaller version. But hey, when you have automated your plant, high speed, The 100 milliliter bottle was, to these days, not an option. And to change the changeover costs and the time, you know, you name it.
Makes sense, yeah.
So I've done that for a while. So for 3 years, I've done this predominantly worked in the Netherlands and France to these days, and a bit of Spain and Portugal, but there was only two smaller sites where we operated. So that most of the time I've been in France and the Netherlands. And then I got the opportunity to move to the Emirate of Sharjah by a contract manufacturing company owned over there by the Rulers family. They have been interested to get a European, and I think after a while I learned as well, they were really looking for a German one. You know, these guys, like, this has to be exactly in that way. No move. Huh? You have to produce like that. No, because when you come to the Arabic world, you know that as well. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's working. Huh? It's working.
I think I think it helped that the same ruling family also had the BMW dealership as well. But
that's all right. That's the same one. And so therefore, they were really looking for a European coming over there, auditing, changing, getting in ISO standards. And that was the look what they had in terms of for the search, why they have really deliberately said, I think we should go for a European. And when it's a German, why not? Huh? Because they cannot maneuver left and right. Yes, sometimes I feel like that as I have grown up. Yeah, that's the only way how it works. Okay, let's do it like this. So then when it's written, let's do it like this. So so they were running there for 5 years, six of their plants for personal and home care. There was everything. There was dishwash, there was liquid, home care liquid, personal care liquid, aerosols. So there was the whole portfolio. And predominantly was in the first place for their own brand.
Yeah.
So they had their own brand in the Arabic world. Yeah. But due to the nature in the Arabic world, we all know that a bit, as a multinational or as a business owner, it's not so easy to own business in the Arabic world. There are certain rules and regulations which you do not want that as an investor over there. You want to have control over your business. But over there, they protect their world as well a bit. And so for that reason, is a lot of products will be produced with contract manufacturers in Middle East, North Africa. And there's a population of 480 million people, so therefore consumer goods. Never underestimate that. They may have a different income, so therefore their purchase power is different, but then you have to adjust that. You have to find products which you can serve over there. So when I got the experience over there in the Middle East. 5 years was a long time. I'm proud of it, but everyone told me when I made my investigation, they said, listen, an average German will only make it 8 months in the Middle East, and then you give up. So therefore, I made five years out of it. So therefore, seems to be that I was able to adapt and get a bit of a mixture. One time, a customer came, a European brand, came over and visited the plant. And then I got that compliment for the organization, not personally, but the compliment was given to the company. And they said, what you have achieved over there is a German company with Arabic flavor. So therefore, that was like, that's what we have done. And the team was wonderful, like 40 different nationalities, people around the world. That was really, really the time when I learned most, I have to say that, about people, about culture, about how to treat people, how to lead people as well. So what do they expect? You know,
and it was your first intercontinental change in your career, wasn't it? So, yes, I know there's differences, say, in the sort of Southern European, Mediterranean type element of Europe versus Northern Europe. But I think the step to the Middle East, having done it myself as well, you do certainly learn that things get done in a different way. And rather than trying to bend people around, it's to to make things work as
that's
well as
like
they can that way.
That's like what I learned always, like when they said it's Bukra. Eh? Bukra is more tomorrow. So therefore, that's what you heard. That we had a meeting, and then someone said, "Yeah, Bukra." And then you said, What did you mean? No, we're not doing this tomorrow. We're doing this now. We have still some time to go, you know.
Or worse still, Bar Bukra. Oh, no.
Yeah. No, this is like something which you really, but you have to deal with that. Okay. So when you're coming from your own world and you want to work in an international environment and you want to go over there, if you do not understand where they come from, they will survive too. You know what I mean? It's like the world develops in its own speed. The thing is, like, only because you believe what you have learned, it's common sense. No, that's common sense is always from the perspective of the guy who says that, never from the one you're telling this to, because his common sense is a complete other one. And that's what makes it challenging, why people fail, because that they cannot understand that you cannot run over someone. And I've been there in the Middle East in 2011 when this Arabic Spring started, when you've seen how the people they became confused about what democracy and free speech means. And I've received feedback from a couple of people which worked over there with me, when they said, "I think I do not like it." What? No, we want to be told, you know, we have grown up by motivate your people to take the same entrepreneurial skills and work and come forward and decide. Nah, that's not what you will find immediately when you have I do not want to say this about a certain nationality, but there are nationalities, they have grown up in a certain way. They want to hear it from you. What do I have to do today, sir? And then you have to tell them. Maybe the smartest guy in the room wants to hear from you what he should do, and he will do it, and he takes the respect for that. But you recognize maybe, gosh, this guy has 3 university degrees, and who am I? And he asked me, "What is this?" Is, you know? But you learn that it's not disrespectful from him. It's only that's how he's grown up. He learned to use when he's told to use, not by his own decision to use. And they have a different situation as well, that in not every place, maybe around the world, it's not everywhere a good employer, let's call it like that. So you make a decision, you have maybe experienced yourself as well, you make a decision and then it's wrong. Oh shit, that was a wrong decision, that's not going well for us. Now in a normal world, we are saying is you have a talk with someone about the situation, about your bad decision. But there are cultures and places around the world. And when we talk about that, let's face it, especially in the world in Dubai, where these people from the other places around there can make much more money than they can do in their home country. But then the decision, they don't want to do it because they don't want to lose their job.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting compensated. Strange things when you talk about that. But this is something which you really have to learn. And that place was one of the first ones where I recognized complete as a new perspective of how work is done every day, what you have to do, what the people believe who you are and what you do, and that you have to be strong. There's no question of that when I've been there. That I can sit there, no, I have no idea now. That's the last sentence they want to hear from you. You have no idea how we can solve that problem. You always have an idea. And then they will do it. Mm-hmm. They will work with you when I see that all of the challenges which we had on the manufacturing, using the material which we received, the packaging challenges which you have, getting a launch done for a product which has to be in the market or whatever on a certain day. So that's the reason why you're there. That's what you learn from that one. And that's not by arrogance. It's like only that's the perspective what they have.
It's what works where, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what has worked until that day to whatever. I mean, I remember going out to Dubai to run a business in 2001 and being quite horrified, I think is the best way to put it, of the culture that if somebody did something wrong in the workplace, that they might be fined. And that they might have a fine and might be something deducted from their salary.
Yeah.
What? You know,
what?
And it was an accepted mode of operation then. I don't think so much the case now, but it was alien.
Changed.
It was alien to me, but it worked, and it was a very effective method. So we adapt, and you saw that there. So after Citra, what was the next step?
I moved into pharmaceutical. So therefore, that was a one year opportunity. It was not 1 year in the first place, but it turned out to become a 1 year opportunity later on. So in the pharmaceutical world, a customer of Skitra who bought antiseptic liquids from us was interested and offered me opportunity to work at the CCO over there. And so therefore, I moved to Africa. Spent most of the time in that year in all sub-Saharan countries. That's something else. This is really something else. Do you know what? When you think you are a great sales guy, I would send you to Idomota Market in Lagos and ask you to sell something. And do you know what? You will go home, you will suffer hunger, you will not bring any food home for the people, because that's back to basic. That's so much basic. You have to, you in Ghana, wherever, Togo, wherever you are, and you want to sell it, that's not something like strange marketing concepts or whatever. It's only like you have a product, you want to get it over there, it's the best price. Find your way, talk to the people directly. There is no, you cannot send a letter or a phone call. You have to be in front of the people. You do this. And you take sometimes as well strange approach. You go to someone and say, listen, I have a wonderful product for you. How much money do you have in your cupboard over there? And then he opens it. I remember that when one of these distributors we have worked over there, and he opens it, I have $10,000. I said, do you know what? I will create you a wonderful container, which you get next week, taking the $10,000 and moved away. And then he gets that container. That is more on, how would you say that? Trust, relationship over the years, which you have to get before you can really make business over there. That's really something where the people feel that that is a trustworthy person. Because especially when you think about Africa, so many people are coming over there. They want something over there because Africa has so much to offer. And so therefore, that's what you have to create and develop. There's another level of what you learn from people, how this works.
And you were probably drawing on some of your trader mentality that you developed in the original business.
So by that point
you're now starting to reuse lessons and techniques and things that you've learned earlier on in your career.
I wouldn't have said restart. I really went really back or it was really recognizing straight away that whatever I've done in these wonderful offices around the world, talking to customers, making really strange concepts and how to sell certain things with discounts and what, you know, and measures of sales velocities or so, whatever, forget it. You know, you don't use it over there. It's not working, you know. I had this wonderful experience, if you allow me that minute. A guy came to me. I've been in, remember very well, it was in Ndola in Ghana. And Dolo, yeah, in Dolo, you have to pronounce it. Hopefully it was correct. And there was one of the young sales guys came to me and complained about his salary. So, and then I said, yeah, you know, we have a basic, we have commission basis and so, and like this, yeah, there's a thing. But, and then I thought, okay, now what I learned so far, I'm very smart. And I think I push him away a bit with that, because didn't want to talk about that, was not comfortable in that situation. And then, so I thought, okay, do you know what? I'll give him a challenge. So I said, listen, you can earn $1 million a year in this company if you provide me a business plan which indicates that you should get $1 million for that because you're selling equivalent to that, that we can pay you this. What I have not recognized is that these guys in Africa, and I love all of the African people over there, believe me, because they are well educated, they want to learn, they are so much motivated to change their world and their life. He came back the next day with a business plan. It was the next day, you know, and then, oh, and I was, you know, surprised.
Careful what you say, yeah.
Well, he's surprised. He told me that I should do this, you know. It was not a $1 million business plan, I have to say that, but at least it was a starting point which I could talk with him. And that also gave me the next level of, you know, understanding of it, how you have to treat people, what you have to do with them, how you respect that, what you ask them to do, and what you have to deliver in return as an individual. And I'm always saying that when we look into a business, we talk about assets. Assets seems to be machines, equipment, which I have, that's an asset. And I will tell you, the asset is the employee and the machine is, what can you do? It's a funny experience here. It was in a Southern European country. We may both recognize immediately what I'm talking about, but there was we had a plant over there and then we were running lines and then we had the machines and the employee was assigned to to the manufacturing line number one. We had no business on line number one, but we had business on line number four. We were not producing on that day because the guy was sitting on his chair, showed me his contract. And said, no, so I'm not working. I'm line number one working. So what's your real asset? It's only when you can take the experience of the people and you can move them around and do all of the other stuff. And as more they do, as more they are the multi-skilled operators and they help you to deliver your promises, which you have given to your customers out there.
We always say the same to all our clients. You know, anybody can take a great big shed or building or whatever and put equipment in it. That doesn't make a business. It's people that make a business. Okay, the better the tools and the materials, the better the product those people can make. Yes, I grant you. And the more competitive you can be. So there is a balance. But thankfully, because I'm in the people business, people are the key asset, and the right leadership, the right middle management, the right operators, all working cohesively is very key.
The fair question is always what you can do. You go into a business, you work with a company, you go in there, and then you ask on a Friday that you need a volunteer shift on a Saturday. That's your answer. The percentage of employees coming on the next day. That's not a measure to say that's a good guy or a bad guy. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is like the culture of your organization. When you ask on by short notice, hey guys, we have something, the company needs help. We have given a promise to a customer we want to achieve. And they messed it up. They messed it. It was not our mistake. We can say no, but they messed it up. And then you will see the amount of volunteers who are saying, there's no doubt. No, of course we are here tomorrow. And we'll do that. You will not do this every day because the work, in terms of the people, how they can manage their private life is similarly important because the family stands behind that. I'm always looking as well into the families, whom I'm working with. He's married. What's the kids and so on. You have to see the whole picture of an individual. Yeah. Only then you can make that. So. That's it. So that was Africa. And then I moved on to Europe. We always had, I'm saying that because my son, we always said when we've been in Dubai, we will either stay until he is finished high school or in the German school system. This is like all of the kids are moving after what we call Grundschule, after it grade four. Into grade five. It's a new school building and it's something new. So therefore we always, my wife, we said, when we make only one move, either we stay in Dubai and until finish the high school or at this grade four. And then I had the opportunity to join Coveris, was called Coveris at this day, and renamed Pacor after a couple of years, a plastic rigid company. And so I've stayed there for 8 years. In different positions. Had the pleasure to live in Finland, in the UK as well, northeast of you know that place. So a bit of west of Newcastle. It's not a lot. Why? So it's a very quiet place, I have to say that.
And wet.
Yes. So you can focus on work. You can really focus on work. So therefore, it's nothing disturbing you. And in these days, I have to say that for all of the soccer fans of your podcast, is Newcastle was not really a good team. I was there once for a game. And in the meantime, it's changed. All giving respect. Newcastle is back where they want to be. Yeah. So there was not a lot of disturbance. So could spend a lot of time over there. And learned a lot about plastic, about the standard classical PSPP PET material. We had injection molding, compression molding, thermoforming. So therefore, that was an addition to really from a manufacturing process of how a product, and then predominantly in the food environment, right? You have to see this in dairy as well. What are the requirements for packaging? That was interesting, really, after all of these years to learn something extra. Now it's like what you have to focus on, that the products which you that they help food to have a longer shelf life, because we need that shelf life. We have to feed people out there in the world. Imagine that one. I'm now here in the US, something like, I don't have to add so many things about US talks at the moment, but they, like when you see the US, they have really between 35 to 40% food waste. In Europe, we are more to 50% food waste. Why is it? Because the supply chain to manufacture food, the supply chain to get it to consumers into their fridge, and they consume it as well. How often I look in our fridge, yours and mine, yeah. How many things do we throw away after a certain period of time because we ran over the
shelf life,
the expiry date of shelf life date. And that's insane. You know what I mean? It's like we have 880 million people suffering hunger on that planet. And in reverse, you know, we other developed countries, we throw food away. So, you know, it's like, I will not change it. You will not change it. But it's just something which you have to talk about. So therefore, we need packaging material. We need a supply chain which allows to get food to all places and corners of the world in the right timeline, that is a safe food. And I think everyone deserves that. And you can do a lot with packaging about that. Yeah. You can do a lot. Not every discussion is helpful at this moment. I do not know what's first. The environmental aspect of the planet. I fully understand that when other countries are saying, no, we are not joining this right now. We have developed to this stage that we can feed our people now. Why should we turn this back now? Because some of the products which we have now, packaging alternatives which are discussed, they do not have that shelf life. We cannot put a barrier into that, yeah. You know? Or other stuff is like you've seen this. Imagine that one, glass and aluminium industry, when the electricity prices, when everything went rocket science, size by, when was it? A couple of years back now only, when this went through the roof. The whole recycling process and the manufacturing process of these products, that was unbelievable. And the supply situation was not secured at these days. Remember when the Russian gas was banned?
Yeah. And I think also at one point we were making some good ground in 2018, 2019, but then in 2020, when COVID hit, certain things went back, because I remember there were supermarkets selling vegetables loosely in netting. And then suddenly we're putting things back in plastic bags because we need barriers because of COVID, you know, which was unfortunate that these things happened.
The hygiene aspect. It's like we should never ignore that fact as well. You don't want, you know it by yourself. You're going into your grocery shop and then you see the people in front of you touching all of the food and fruit and vegetables, which you supposed to buy later on. You don't know what he touched before. You mentioned COVID. That was one thing which we learned, but it's the general hygienic aspect of it, you know? So therefore, blame packaging in the first place that it is not needed. As soon as you recognize that there is a health issue associated to that, you may talk differently about packaging again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
after Europe, you then went on to the US, where we find you today.
Yes. And now I'm in the US. I had the, as I have to say that with all fairness, my son was the first one here in the US. So therefore he applied for the University of Missouri. I'll make a bit of a advertisement here. Great university.
Please,
I like it. So he moved over there. And while Pakur was sold in these days to the Danish company Fairch, I was looking around, what should I do? And then I had the opportunity to join Westraw Coffee, which also was most of the time, quite often I move, then not often, that's bullshit. Like, sorry, can I say that in a podcast? No. I do not know what you're allowed. That was a customer of ours with the single serve capsules. So therefore I moved over here and helped to start the business in terms of the coffee industry. They big plans running here and ready to drink plant now and single serve capsule and ground coffee. So therefore that was a really interesting project for me to come over to the US. I'm not close to Missouri. I'm now in Little Rock, Arkansas. But this is a 6 hours drive to meet my son over there in Missouri compared to maybe then a 10 hours flight from Europe. So therefore it is somehow a bit closer. We have to see that. Yeah. So that's predominantly what my career has given. I do not know. It's like I'm heading more in the direction of 60. That means on a certain moment in time, either I will be told that I have to retire, or I think here in the US, I can do as long as I want. I think in Germany was always like you're told with 67, done, chalas.
Everything's changed now. I think everything's changed. I mean, let's face it, if you use an expression my wife likes to use, which is, you know, we haven't been ploughing fields for the last 30 or 40 years of our career. You know, we as a society work in a different way now. So actually, when some people really needed to retire at 60, let's face it, we're just getting started. You know, I'm 58. I know more now than I've ever known. And your wisdom and maturity and judgment and insight and all the collective stuff that you've done, whether it's taking on another CEO role or a non-exec role or a couple of non-exec roles or a chairman role or whatever, working with private equity, you name it. We're seeing so many different things nowadays. I know some people that are doing non-exec roles in packaging and they're having more fun because they've got two or three board level positions in non-conflict, non-competing type situations where they're really taxing their brains. They're really being able to delve deep into different areas of print and packaging without being totally in that, you know.
I think, listen, what you say is, and your statement there, this is very much important, important for all of us, if it is in the packaging industry or everywhere else. If you want to make a certain career in a leading role in an organization, on a certain moment in time, it's not about you anymore. It's not about what I have learned and that I use this and I do something. No, it's more about like how you can help the others to gain the same experience in the fastest possible timeline, because that's what is required. You know, it gives you so much. It's fun to watch when your organization develops. When the young guys are developing and learning and getting the experience based on the decisions they might want to do, there is an interaction of that. Is it? You cannot leave everything to your organization. Sit in your chair, you're saying it's like you're the CEO of a company, you have a young group of people around you, and you ask them and say, what is the decision you want to do on this kind of challenge which we face in the market? Okay, then on a certain moment, you may have to say something. No, we are not doing this. Okay, it was a nice idea, but I will overrule here. But the first place, it should be always like that you invite everyone to attend this discussion and make a proposal. And then you add that. That's what experience is about. The experience to hear someone's idea and put it into the current marketplace, and then getting the imagination, it could work. It could work. Give it a try. Because as more as you allow your teams to provide an idea and bring it into life, as more confidence they have to achieve something in the future. As more you create, and that's maybe the different world that I said before in Dubai, you know, where the people are waiting for you to tell them something, and they changed as well, I'm quite sure. So I left Dubai in 2014, so it has changed for sure in the last 10 years. But I said what I experienced over there, that was different. And now we are really in that place, is like motivate your teams to make a decision, to propose something. And with the only thing is where you experience and you as a person are coming into place to read that through analyze this and give them either a feedback or let them get the experience. Sometimes you have to say, I know it will not work, but they need the experience. You are a father. I'm a father. How do we teach our kids? Are we telling them every day how to do? And then what? They're with 18, leaving school. My son is now in college. And then what? I'm not there anymore. He's not experienced anything. No, certain things you have to. Definitely, I will not allow him to put his hand on the when he was young in the cooking stable. You know, when people are saying, "Oh, they have to experience everything." Nah, not really everything.
To a point, yeah.
To a point. And that's the same thing what you do in your organization. The only difference is that you do this with someone who is maybe 35.
I've got a good friend. He's also one of our advisors, or our advisor to us as a company. And he's had a very successful career in lots of different types of businesses, and very good at strategic thinking and approaching things from a different angle and inverting things and so on. And one of the things, his name is John Gilchrist, and one of the things I admire about John, and he proclaims it himself, is he's good at saying something to you that makes you think about the situation yourself. I think you know, something that you demonstrated right at the beginning of your career, where you talked about going and finding out what people's problems were and then solving them, is classic sales, isn't it? Find a point of discontent and then solve the problem. And I think from a hierarchical perspective, you have seen enough throughout your career of different types of challenges that FMCGs face, brand owners face, converters face, material suppliers, cultural differences, to have a lot of perspective, to have a lot of, you know, have you thought of that? Because you've thought of it and you can anticipate that it could be an issue, but you can put it out there in front of your management team and see what they do with it. And you're a guiding hand, aren't you? You're a godfather. You're somebody there that will be there, but won't necessarily micromanage the situation.
Yeah, that's what you're right is like what you can enjoy maybe in the last years of your career, that why you create more fun. More fun on top of what you have done before, but it's like where you really can play a role where you are, like what you said, the godfather. The power of a question to someone in terms of idea discussion is, you should never underrate that, but you have to ask the right question. It's not this typical thing, like people said, the five whys or so. That's not what I'm saying. It's like really by when you know your task, your project, what you want to talk about, And you can really ask the question, what do you want to achieve with that? Where do you want to go then? Have you seen all of the aspects we are bringing in? As I told you, where is it sold? All of that, what I told you before, is like what I learned over the years. There's so many components getting together to sell something. There's an administration piece of that. You have to measure a lot of things. This now we need it in these days, especially when you've I've had the pleasure to work really like my own company in the beginning, and privately owned, and as well private equity, and now a stock listed, a publicly traded company. Different things you have to answer from time to time. You know, what is good, what is bad? Everything is good and everything is bad. That's it. Yeah. But some people may feel more comfortable in running in a family owned small business, which has maybe one or two sites, where you have much faster interaction and contact to the owners itself, and you can bring your idea forward. Could be. And others feel very comfortable in the multinational organization, in a head office where you make so much, you know, so big decisions in terms of values, very quick. Not a long thought process. You have to be really spontaneous in finding something. Yeah, whoever. Everyone has to find
something. If you were going to sort of find one thing that you'd like to say to our audience that sort of encapsulates your mantra, your success, is there anything that you remind yourself of, or would say, you know, always think of this or always do that? Or is there anything that
I was always scared about every step I've taken. Scared in the beginning. I got a job offer. I had talks about that. I went home. I was so much scared about that. I couldn't sleep the whole night because I thought, it's impossible. I cannot do that. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever you do before, you think first you make your, you finish your school and then you learn something over there, and that foundation, you are automatically entitled to take a really senior job or whatever. No one has learned that. If you're not scared about something, that's dangerous. You have to be first, you have to see that you want to make a career. You have to receive an offer where someone says, we believe you can do that. First of all, if someone believes in you in something, that's great. So therefore, when they gave you that opportunity to do so, but be really not scared immediately, but in a sense of afraid by going back.
Apprehensive.
Yes. Take it, think about that, and accept the challenge, but not everyone. If you can't find, if you cannot find anything where you would say, oh, I do not have that knowledge, can I learn that? And the world of learning has changed so much. Imagine that one. Like when we both have grown up in the 70s, there was no Wikipedia or an internet. We had the luxury of a dictionary or whatever, something at home when your parents bought some books.
Yeah.
Now you do not know it. Oh, we Google it. So you put something in and there's plenty of additional questions you may have not thought about, which are provided as an opportunity where you can get all of these answers. So, and when you understand that, you take it. Regardless if you feel comfortable at that moment or ready for that, no one is ready for the next move. I can tell you that if you find someone who tells you, no, I was ready for the CEO job of 700 million or 2 billion company or whatever, who was telling you that?
Yeah.
I would have doubts.
Yeah, I mean, it's like athletes, isn't it? Or entertainers, you know, you ask people about famous actors and say, do you get nervous before you go on stage? And they go, oh, definitely. Yeah, you know, it's the adrenaline pumping, isn't it? Someone just about to run a 100 meters race in the Olympics, they are nervous. They are hyped up. They are. And yeah. I think the opposite of that is complacency, which is dangerous. Yeah. The fear of getting it wrong, I think, is a healthy it keeps you sharp, doesn't it?
And let me quote one, while you talk about actors, let me quote one thing which I have used for myself always, but maybe became more famous as soon as we had Ted Lasso. One famous statement which I now have seen that I've done this for years, not knowing it before, be curious. That's what you have to. If you're not curious, if you don't ask questions, if you don't ask the world around you about who they are, what they do, how they do, nothing happens. You will not. And so that was one of the scenes in what I saw in Ted Lasso when he's asking that, this was mentioned by him. So therefore, and I've continued using this for myself as well, with people asking me like this, I remain curious, and then things come, you have ups and downs, and never give up. There's another day and another door.
Yeah. And that's it. There's a lot to be said for continuing to being in the game. Somebody was saying to me recently about 5-day test cricket. Sometimes it's not just about winning, it's about not losing. So you're still there, you're still in the game, you're still there, because there's always a chance that you might get a chance if you keep on turning up. Set your stall up every day, be there, be in the market, reinvent yourself, do all sorts of things that Yeah. Well, Nicholas, I want to say on behalf of our audience and behalf of Emma and I, behind Packaging Perspectives, thank you very much. It's been an immense pleasure talking with you. I fear we could sit here and talk for another few hours, but our data shows that podcasts don't normally run on for several hours, but we'll look forward to doing part two in another few months' time. So thank you very much for being our guest. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye.